from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. This afternoon in Russia, a meteorite struck there, injuring up to 1,000 people. We'll talk about what that means and also the significance of the asteroid that will be passing by Earth also today. And then in our second half hour, we'll take up the topic of raising the minimum wage. President Obama reignited that debate this week in his State of the Union proposal. Will raising the minimum wage lift people out of poverty, or will it kill jobs and leave people worse off instead? Meteorites, asteroids, and the minimum wage, all ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome to Forum. Today in Russia, a meteor exploded over that country, shattering windows, injuring up to 1,000 people. We want to get the latest on this event now from Ryan Chilcote of Bloomberg News, who is in Moscow ostensibly to cover the G20, Ryan. But as sometimes happens, that event has gotten overtaken a bit by this morning's news. Tell us what you know about what's going on.
Exactly. I mean, the G20 delegates were hoping to talk about currency wars, and then this meteor explodes in the skies over Russia, not in Moscow, but two time zones to the east. A meteor about the size of 1 cubic meter exploded, and it sent shockwaves out through the city of Chelyabinsk, shattering glass that went then flying into the air, injuring, like you said, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 people.
And what's been the reaction, official reaction, within the Russian government in terms of emergency response? Is this something people have been able to respond to in the way that meets the needs of the people who are injured?
It's difficult for me to make an evaluation about that, but, you know, it certainly got the attention of the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. He was probably intending on focusing on the G20 today because Russia's the host of the G20. It's a big platform, big opportunity for Russia to be on the global stage. But instead, he was busy receiving his emergencies situations minister, who came in and told him about the situation. Nearly 1,000 people injured, more than 100 people in the hospital. There's obviously very few ways to prepare for something like this, but you know, it appears that they're doing what they can. You know, Russians are a bit superstitious, so they've been saying, you know, different things about this. The Russian finance minister, of all people, weighed in. He said it was a sign of good tidings to come. and an awful lot of people are out there also saying that, while the meteor exploding was a bad thing, it's good that there's an asteroid out there that you probably know about as well that's been going by the Earth today. That is much bigger in size, that is going to pass us all by and is no longer a threat. So too bad about the meteor, but good that, you know, the asteroid didn't come anywhere close.
Ryan Chilcote of Bloomberg News giving us the latest from Moscow. Ryan, thank you, and I hope you'll get time to cover what you hope to be there to cover as well.
Or at least not hit by a meteor. Cheers.
All right. Brian Chilcote, thanks very much. Joining us now is Andrew Frechno, who's the chair of the astronomy program at Foothill College, to give us something of the science behind what is happening with the meteor that exploded over Russia. And, of course, as Ryan Chilcote also mentioned, the asteroid that people have been speculating about that passes by Earth today. Andrew Frechno, thanks for joining us on such short notice. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be with you.
So tell us first what this is, what a meteor actually is, and what the significance of this explosion that happened over central Russia today.
Well, yes, let's begin with the notion that we live in what you might call a dirty solar system, that the planets and moons that are part of the sun's family are in fact accompanied by what we might generously call debris, but my students call garbage out there. And there's a rocky garbage, material made out of rocky material, and then there's icy garbage, which we call the comets. And although a good number of these small chunks in the solar system have well-behaved orbits, some of our listeners may know that there's a vast belt of rocky material between Jupiter and Mars. That's called the asteroid belt. Nevertheless, there is enough loose garbage, garbage flying in a wide range of orbits, that occasionally some of this material intersects the orbit of our planet, and occasionally both we and the garbage are there together on the orbit at the same moment, and then something can hit the Earth. This is by no means the first time that such a larger chunk has hit the Earth. In fact, there were several over Russia just in this past century. And it is sort of part of the life in the solar system scenario. Every once in a while we get hit.
And are meteors then, as you describe them, simply chunks, cast-offs from asteroids?
Right. We believe that asteroids come in all sizes, by the way. So you could have a smaller asteroid, and it could, as you say, be fragment of a larger chunk a long time ago, something that collided in the asteroid belt, for example, and then the pieces were flung out to take their own orbits through the solar system. But let's make sure we all have the vocabulary. When something is out there in space, we talk about it as an asteroid or a comet or a meteoroid sometime. When something is flashing through the atmosphere, we call it a meteor. That was also called a shooting star. And then when something has landed down on the ground and is recovered, that's called a meteorite. So you'll be hearing in the news stories all of those vocabulary words used now, whether it's a meteor, that means flashing through, or a chunk that's been found on the ground, that's a meteorite.
Andrew Fracknoy, the chair of the astronomy program at Foothill College, joining us this morning to talk about the meteor that exploded over central Russia today, injuring up to 1,000 people. And we'll also get to in a moment the asteroid, which was passing by Earth today as well. You can join us if you have a question about the skies above and what is floating around out there and what may rain down upon us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your questions on our Facebook page or on our website as well. The meteorite, then, if I'm getting the terminology correct, that actually it's not a meteorite then, right? If it's still a meteor, if it didn't actually land, if it exploded
right
over the skies.
And Justin, you're good. And in fact, there's one more term that we use when a meteor is extremely bright. It's called a fireball. And that's what we think we had in Russia today. We had a fireball. The videos that you can now see on the web are remarkable in how intensely bright the object is as it flashes through the sky. This is happening because it's burning up in the Earth's atmosphere. And the more there is of an object to burn up, the brighter the light is. So small chunks will make a little shooting star that you wish on or point out to your girlfriend, but the larger chunks are called fireballs, and they are something of awe and apparently tremendous shock. And that's what we think happened in Russia. Not that the material hit anyone. The best I can get on the web is that it actually landed in a lake eventually, although I don't think that's been confirmed. What happened is that the shock of its passage through the air, moving so quickly and having so much material, apparently then provided the equivalent of an explosion which blew out the windows. And very sadly, a lot of people, having seen the fireball, were crowding the windows of the buildings nearby just when the shockwave hit the windows and blew them out or in. And that meant a lot of people got injured by flying glass. That's why you heard the reporters say that there were maybe 1,000 injuries so far. None of those were from being hit by the rock itself. They all involved people for whom the shock caused some kind of injury in the building where they were located.
And if you have a question about today's meteorite activity over Russia, as well as the asteroid that will be passing Earth, you can join us at 866 and pose a question to Andrew Fracknoy at 866-733-6786. One more question about the meteor, and then we'll move on to the asteroid that's passing by. But I remember as a kid going to visit Meteor Crater in Arizona. Like maybe that should be more appropriately titled Meteorite Crater. But compare.
We've argued about that exact point. Yeah.
So compare in size or scope and frequency. Is what happened today today in Russia analogous to what happened however many thousands of years ago that was in Arizona?
Excellent question, and thank goodness, absolutely not. The crater you're talking about, which is a great tourist attraction on the way to the Grand Canyon in Arizona, sometimes called the Barringer Crater after the family that owns it, that was an enormous disaster. We think that that was made by a much larger chunk, one that didn't burn up, but hit the earth, didn't burn up high in the atmosphere, but hit the earth. It was coming in at speeds of 25,000 to 40,000 miles per hour, and it eventually hit the ground with the impact that was equivalent to a 15-megaton nuclear bomb.
Wow.
The equivalent of 15 million tons of high explosive. The result was a crater in the ground, almost 4,000 feet in diameter, 600 feet deep, and with a rim rising 150 feet above the desert. So when these things hit, they explode from just the violence of their passage. As they hit, the explosion is about 10 to 20 times the size of the original chunk. So 4,000 foot wide diameter. If that hit your house, it could ruin your whole day.
And so
this was I'm not joking because these are serious subjects, but this was a far, far lighter object. It never made it perhaps down to the ground at all. It may have, only the fireball may have been visible. We don't know how many fragments actually make it down, but a much smaller, thank goodness, kind of passage this today than it was back when this crater happened. We estimate that Barringer crater happened thousands of years ago, so this is not something which is a recent fall.
Let's hear what some of our listeners would like to know about today's events up in space and here on Earth. Craig joins us first in Santa Cruz. Craig, go ahead with your question for Andrew Fracknoy.
Yeah, I'm just curious, the asteroid that's coming by, will any of our satellites, our photography satellites up there, be able to get pictures of that, good close pictures?
Well, so let's fill in our listeners on what this is. You're now talking about something quite different, which is there's a regularly scheduled asteroid, if you will, coming by coincidence the same time. There was some speculation that they may be connected, but they're coming from different directions, and it's very unlikely that there's any connection between them. There is this asteroid coming by, which we have tracked since 2012, and it's pretty small and moving very fast. It's about, we're estimating it's anywhere from 100 to 150 foot wide, you know, again, which is large compared to the size of your little brother, but it's tiny for astronomers. And it's coming by at about 17,400 miles an hour. So what we are doing, we're doing a number of things. People are tracking it from Earth. There's also a radar tracking project going on from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory where they're going to try to bounce radar beams off it and get a much better sense of how big it is and what shape it is.
And will we be able to photograph it, as Craig is asking?
Well, it's not very easy to photograph. All kinds of people around the world are trying to photograph it, but I think what he meant was, are there going to be like really good pictures from space because they're closer to it, some kind of detailed close-up pictures? And no, I don't think there's anything that's going to show the close-up view of what it looks like. But everybody around the world who has any access to a telescope and is in the right path is trying to take a picture of the little streak as it goes by.
And how do we know, Craig, thanks so much for the call, how do we know that it indeed will miss us? I mean, is there no possibility that it'll suddenly say, oh, I think I'll take a left turn here?
Pretty relevant question today. And no, the nice thing about chunks of rock in space is that they have no propulsion. There's nothing that can make them turn or veer. The only thing they respond to is gravity or if they collide with something, right? So by understanding the gravity of the Earth, by understanding the path that this asteroid has been taking since its discovery last year, we can calculate to within a few miles exactly how it will move and respond to the Earth's gravity. This is something that there's a whole office at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory specializing in measuring and understanding the movement of celestial objects. And there's no chance this particular object will hit the Earth.
Yeah.
It's given the very romantic name of 2012 DA14. That's the catalog number. But that doesn't mean that future objects might not. And certainly there have been objects that have hit the Earth, as we found out today.
Let's get to our next question, which is on the same question of how we know exactly where these objects will go. Carlos in Fremont has a question on that subject. Carlos, go ahead, please.
Hey, I appreciate the subject and taking the call. Hey, so just real briefly, my question is, aren't there organizations out there, say for instance like SETI, that their job is to look up in the sky day and night and kind of check for things? How come they miss this? Like, shouldn't we have been able to figure out, hey, there's a – I mean, I'm glad they figured out the other one's not going to hit, right? But didn't they figure out, hey, this one, you know, heads up, Russia.
Yeah, so great question. Why do we know one is going to miss us, and why didn't we see the tiny meteor that did come our way?
That's a really wonderful question, and that's exactly the dilemma that astronomers have. So we have been, as your listener quite correctly points out, on a multi-year survey. A number of people like David Morrison, the great asteroid astronomer who's been on forum a number of times, has been pointing out for decades that we need to monitor these near-Earth objects, as we call them, and make sure that we have some warning when they're coming. And so we begin very logically with the biggest ones. The biggest ones are the most dangerous, and the biggest ones are the ones that are easiest to see from far away. Remember, these are, compared to things that we normally keep track of, stars and planets and moons, these small chunks are quite small, and so they reflect very little sunlight. So they're not that easy to see when we see them far away. So for both self-preservation reasons and practical reasons, we began by cataloging the big ones that are 10 miles across or 5 miles across. Those are the ones that would be the biggest danger. And we've done a pretty good job, but astronomers have done a pretty good job in getting a catalog together of the biggest near-Earth objects. The problem is, as we found out today, that in addition to the big ones, there are countless small ones. And I have to be honest, for most of the really small ones, the amount of warning we get that they're coming is less than half a second.
Wow.
So because we just can't keep track of the thousands and thousands of really small pieces of garbage that are flying around the solar system. Now, we're doing our best there, as the listener points out, cataloging programs going on all around the world. Observatories, governments are keeping track of this. But the smaller they are, the more elusive they are. You know this with pests in your own house, and it's true in the solar system as well.
Carlos, thank you so much. Let's get to Wayne next, who joins us from Atlanta this morning. Wayne, go ahead, please.
Hi, my question is going to sound like something out of a sci-fi movie, but I'm just wondering if we have the capabilities to deal with a mass on the scale of 10 miles, of something that large. Do we have the ability to shoot ballistic missiles or to do something that could lessen the degree of the impact or eliminate it before we have potentially an extinction moment?
Great question. You can believe you're not the only one worrying about this. We call this the Bruce Willis question because in one of those terrible movies, they sent Bruce Willis up to deal with this. But in fact, yes, both the military, the U.S. military, the U.N. in a sort of joint discussion, and many people, scientists, are thinking about exactly this. And I'm going to say some pretty obvious things in response to what you asked. As with everything else, the more notice we have, the more equipped we will be to deal with it. So if something is coming at you and you have 2 seconds notice, there's not much you can do. But if, on the other hand, we find some larger chunk, which is what you asked about, coming our direction and we have 20, 30 years notice, then there's a lot we can do. Because if you have lots of time, you could push a little bit on that chunk of rock to change its orbit to miss the Earth. then that we could nudge it aside slowly if we had decades to do it. It doesn't take a rocket, or some people are talking about a gravity tug, some kind of a boat that pulls it. It doesn't take a lot of pull if you've got 10 years or 20 years to change the orbit. If the thing is right on top of you, then it may be a big, much bigger problem. We could try to launch a missile at it, but if all you do with the missile is blow it up, then you now have 1,000 pieces coming at the Earth rather than one piece, and no one's going to pin a medal on you for that one.
So how seriously should we take this? Can you put this in some sort of context and as far as the threat that these objects represent?
Well, this is a topic where we are doing lots of calculations, and the thing I would ask most people if you're worried about this is to think back to the life of your family, going back maybe a couple of generations. Has anyone in your family been hurt by flying rocks from space? And I would say most listeners will say, I've never heard of this, except on some of these news reports that come up occasionally. The chances of any single person being affected by this is not very large. The time scale between very large impacts is on the thousands of years. Most of the Earth's surface is water, so even when things do hit, they're more likely to hit in the water. Thank goodness we have a protective blanket of air that covers our planet where the friction burns up many of the smaller chunks. Even if we do get a shock wave, at least the chunks often burn up. And so overall, I'm not taking out extra insurance on my home about some asteroid hitting us, particularly on the head. On the other hand, as a planet, as a species, this is something that astronomers have been warning about for some time. We ought to have better monitoring of these chunks in place, and we ought to have the capability of dealing with larger incoming chunks in, you know, significant advanced time. So this is a good wake-up call for, you know, fund your local astronomer who's working on this. And at the same time, it's not something where people need to cower under the bed every night.
Andrew Fracknoy, the chair of the astronomy program at Foothill College, as we talk about today's meteor activity in Russia and the passing by of an asteroid later today. Last question, email question from Lorraine, who writes in, a meteorite landed in Marin County last October and a piece was recovered. Do you know if that meteorite was analyzed? And when they are analyzed, what do we learn about them? And use that, if you would, also just for a last comment, Andrew Fracknoy, in the minute or so we have left, about what we can learn from these sorts of events.
Oh, excellent question. Yes, we do grab any meteorites that we can and analyze them. And some remarkable discoveries have been made. A meteorite that landed in Australia was analyzed, and it had amino acids inside. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein and one of the most fundamental building blocks of life. Well, at first we thought, well, amino acids, a kangaroo came by, did its business on the side. Maybe that just Earth amino acids in the rock, but no, it turned out the chemistry was different. We were actually looking at non-earthly amino acids. We were looking at something that came from outer space. And so that doesn't mean there's life in them, but just some of the very simplest chemical building blocks of life have been found in these chunks of rock, which is a big implication for, you know, how quickly these chemical building blocks of life get started in the vast cosmic scheme of things. And so we're always analyzing these rocks to figure out what's in them. They, many of them, come from an earlier time when the solar system was forming. So in a sense, they're geological fossils of our time of origin, and they're fascinating to those of us who want to know the history of the solar system.
And we'll leave it there for now. As always, Andrew Fracknoy, thanks so much for joining us and giving us your insight about this phenomenon that we're surrounded
by. My
pleasure.
Everyone, keep your heads down.
All right. Andrew Fracknoy, the chair of the astronomy program at Foothill College. When we return, we'll take up a more earthly matter, the debate over raising the minimum wage. That's next on Forum after this.